You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Hello and welcome to episode 2 of Fly on the Call, candid conversations on music. Things are going smoothly as I get into the swing of things with churning out a weekly podcast. Thank you to everyone who listened to our debut episode last week with Eric of Proper. The feedback I've gotten has been positive and constructive, so I appreciate that too. If you did listen last week, hopefully you'll notice an improvement in the audio quality of this intro. I'll be tweaking things a little as I'm learning, but the solo parts should be sounding better, and starting with episode 4, the audio quality of the interviews themselves should get better too. But on to our guest. This week we have Kevin Tully of Telethon. The band recently released their fourth LP, Hard Pop, via Take This to Heart Records, and they put out one of my favorite releases of last year with their Modern Abrasive EP. Telethon's music exists across the vast spectrum of music genres, taking as many cues from classic rock and musical theater as they do pop punk and indie rock. Our conversation might not cover quite as much ground as their music, but I think it's a really fun one, so please enjoy.
I like just kind of starting off by asking the very vague question of what have you been working on lately?
What have I been working on lately? Well, I mean, we just put out Hard Pop in June, so I think we're finally, the dust is kind of clearing on that, and we're starting to think about, like, what the next move will be. not a move, but, like, creative endeavor. Or Telethon, or any other projects we have, and I'm kind of writing. I'm writing a few songs and like hooks for Telethon songs as always, and I also am like playing around with the idea of maybe starting a project like Heartland, I guess you could say alt country sort of vibe project. So I kind of have been writing little ideas for that. Or that also might just become another Telethon thing, but we're just always busy working on stuff. And then we all have day jobs too.
I mean, with like all the kind of influences that show themselves in like Telethon's music, how do you kind of differentiate now that you're potentially like starting working on another solo project, like how do you kind of differentiate what would be for that versus Telethon?
It's difficult, and I don't think it necessarily has to be different from Telethon because, I mean, in a way, we've created a environment with Telethon where I don't think anybody would be super surprised if we came out with a piece of work that was, like, all revolving around a completely weird genre or, like, just completely out of the ordinary because all of our music, like, kind of floats from genre to genre, if that makes sense. I feel like we could really, if we wanted to release an alt country album or like an electronic album, like we could if we wanted, and I don't think people would be that surprised. But I don't know, it as far as like subject matter, I don't think like it needs to be differentiated. But also, but I also live in Chicago, and there's a lot of like musicians that I've never worked with here that are friends or acquaintances, and sometimes it just seems like it might be kind of fun to play with like a different set of people, not because I'm sick of the Telethon boys or anything, but like what would the music that I make with some of these people I have met here, what would that sound like? So it's more just like, would it be fun to make music outside of Telethon, or would it kind of not make sense? I haven't decided that yet, but it's still fun to write just, like kind of just as I'm writing songs, just stay within the, I guess, room or the space of like more folky acoustic guitar driven, at least at this point, country and folk stuff.
Yeah, that definitely makes sense. And like you mentioned, like working with other artists, like that would be really interesting to see like what kind of influences they brought in too, especially since like Telethon's like 4 LPs in and stuff. It's like you guys probably have a pretty good handle on like where everyone's wheelhouse is and stuff. So
100%. Yeah. I mean, we also know each other since high school, so, and have played in bands together since high school and middle school, even in some cases. So it's like, I truly have no idea what it would sound like if, like, I had a different, different set of people working with me. I don't know. I feel like it would definitely take some getting used to, and in a way, creatively, that sounds kind of interesting. I can't tell if it's good or bad, or if it would just be, I think it would just be something new.
And I wanted to hit on the opener to the album, Loser, That Old Private Hell. I know it's like one that you guys had mentioned was one that you were like super excited for fans to hear. And I know like reading through a lot of the reviews, a lot of them mentioned that. And like specifically like the first line, like the magic of being a loser is that nobody has to find out. Could you talk a little bit about like that song and how it came together and like the lyrics behind it and stuff?
That song had a completely different set of lyrics to begin with when I was writing Hard Pop before it was called Hard Pop. It was like going to be a concept album, and that was always going to be the opener. We had like the melody and the structure of the song, and I had already written a bunch of lyrics kind of about kind of setting the scene in a small town and talking about specific events in the small town. And then, long story short, I blew that whole thing up and started fresh. And rewrote all the lyrics, but a lot of them stayed the same in that song. I wrote that line, the magic of being a loser is that nobody has to find out. Like that was a line where when I was first playing with the melody, like those were the first lines that I sang to that melody. Actually, that's actually a weird case where that the kind of random assortment of words that came out of my mouth as I was playing with those chords and that melody are actually what I kept in the song.
Mm-hmm.
And over time, like that phrase, I mean, it makes sense to read it and say it, but then I wanted to explore, I guess, what are some of the details that could flesh out a statement like that. And that became mm-hmm. the rest of the song. I think that first line, I couldn't concisely tell you what it means, except that it's at once reassuring, but also self-deprecating. And I think that sums up Hard Pop pretty well. Wasn't really a conscious thing. It's just how music comes out of me. But it's like, you know, yes, you're a loser, but you don't have to form your life and your perception of yourself around that, you know?
For sure, yeah. I think it's, like, the way I kind of take it is, like, almost, like, yeah, you can think you suck in your head or whatever, but, like, in the end, like, are other people, like, really thinking about you, or, like, what are, like, their perception of you isn't necessarily, like, the same as yours and stuff, and I think that's the way I take it, and I feel like that's really an interesting kind of, like, idea behind it.
Yeah, I was playing with that. I mean, we have, that's You said it correctly, I think, and not to call back to more lyrics that I wrote, but we have this song called Risks that is off of our album Citrosis, which came out in 2016, and there's a line on that that sometimes you write a line and you say it to your, like, I still think about them, like, in a reassuring way, where it's like, I wrote this kind of reassurance to myself X amount of years ago, and I still say it to myself, but this line in Risks where it's, I know you're worried about the way that the public perceives you, but trust in the statistics that they don't even see you. And I think that sums up kind of my, like, it's my anxiety, but also my reassurance to myself, that I do almost daily. And I do actually think of this, like, it's kind of nice to have this, like, database of words that you've written, almost like, I guess that's why people keep diaries, huh? Good thoughts that will make you feel better in moments like that.
For sure, yeah. And it must be like also a little bit like confidence boosting to be like, I wrote those words and they're making me feel better.
Yeah, well, I wrote them to feel better in general. Like, and so to know that they're still making me feel better, I always think about that. Like that shows some sort of stability in personality, like, if that makes sense, like I always think about how people change, but certain aspects of them don't as the years fly by. And I don't know, it does feel kind of nice to know, like, okay, I was worried about the same old shit in 2016 as I am in 2019. and I made it through already 3 years of, you know, life since then. So I'll make it through this current bout with whatever I'm grappling with.
Yeah, that definitely makes sense. And you mentioned that, like, the opening track was kind of always going to be the opener. And I feel like typically it's kind of like the finale tends to be like kind of the 6.5 minute epic and stuff. So what was it that like made that feel like an opener to you guys?
I think the fact that it has that tight little intro, tight meaning small and concise, like the fact that it was written with that, and that feels very much like, I don't know, the curtain just opens, to use, I don't know, like a theatrical metaphor here, like the curtain just opened and those are the first lines you hear, or like that's the first melody you hear, like that made sense to us. And sometimes your gut says like, yeah, this is definitely a closer, this is definitely an opener. And we thought it would be a cool statement to open up a record with a very long song, because I don't think we've done that yet. No, we've never really, thinking back, like most of our openers have just been like normal length songs or very short songs. So yeah, to have it be this, like, I think it's the longest song on the album. Like that seemed like a interesting move we hadn't tried yet, and we're always looking for those. So those two things coupled together, yeah, it just felt like the intro.
And you mentioned kind of like feeling like it's like the curtain's opening, and there's definitely like kind of a lot of theatrical kind of influence to the music. Can you like speak a little bit to that, like the influence and like the kind of over the top showy vibe that you guys sometimes have?
Yeah, I mean, there are times when it is intentional. Like, I mean, there are songs on the Grand Spontanean. Like, I mean, that was a rock opera, so obviously it's going to be inspired by rock operas and musical theater and stuff. So, like, that was totally intentional. But at the same time, like, our last EP and our newest LP, Hard Pop, like, we're really just trying to make the music that, like, we're not setting out to make theatrical music, but I think the fact that, I don't know, there's five of us and one of them is playing keys, I think it always is going to come out sounding like, in a way, theatrical or grandiose. And I think maybe just the way that we write hooks makes it sound like, I think we definitely have a lot of influence from big rock records as well as musical theater, like whether we're even trying to or not. I think it just comes out sounding like that. That's not to say like there aren't moments, I guess, when it is intentional, but yeah, I think more or less it's just a product of circumstance at this point, and the product of like influences we don't even realize we're employing, if that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely. Again, kind of like speaking to the influences, how do you guys kind of like juggle all the different sounds that you have? And like a lot of the reviews that I read mentioned kind of that the sound is all over the place, but that it's also really cohesive.
Yeah, I'm stoked that it comes across that way, because again, I think this goes back to what I was just saying, like we're really not trying for anything. We just have these structures of songs. Usually they start off as you know, just acoustic guitar, or yeah, just like a collection of chords, and then just through playing together as a band, they become like kind of randomly assorted. Like sometimes we'll say, okay, and this, the second verse needs a little something extra, so we're going to mix up the time or turn it ska or whatever. Sometimes we'll just do that while we're working through the songs. And it just like, we never want to force anything. I think maybe in the past we've like, to varying degrees of success. I can't think of any specific examples. Like we've tried to force a sound on a certain song Mm-hmm. And like sometimes that works, but it's also not that interesting to me. Like I think that what we're doing now is the most natural progression of that, if you know what I mean? Like where we're just letting the ideas, whatever we think of in the moment that we think would sound good for the part, for the, you know, basic skeleton of the song in terms of arrangement, like that's what we do. And we try not to overthink it. And I think because we all listen to different stuff and we know each other so well, like it just, we can quickly at the drop of a hat switch gears and do something weird with it. And that's what I really, really, really love about playing Peloton.
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting that you mentioned kind of like the natural progression. And I think that kind of like ties back to like lyrically how you're saying it was originally going to be another concept album, but then it just didn't feel right and you kind of cut it down. Can you talk a little bit more about like that transition lyrically?
Yeah, I mean, it was probably like a month before we were going to go record. And I had this whole concept like mapped out and a couple songs written for it. And when I say mapped out, I mean, like I have like the blocks of the story, like the things that needed to happen, which is how I wrote the lyrics of the Grand Spontanea. And that worked really well, to do it like that. But then we were like a month out and I had this kind of blurry, I had a story, but it kind of, I couldn't quite get happy with it. And I also didn't want it to be another like really cut and dry like rock opera, and I wanted it to be more impressionistic and stuff, but I also had a really specific story, so those two things naturally conflict with each other. And and to put it as, you know, quickly as possible, or like as summatively as possible, like I just like was not feeling happy with it. I like was feeling, I had a crisis of confidence, you could say, in the story and like my ability to write. I felt very painted into a corner, and my inclination after a while was like, well, how bad would it be if I just started kind of trying to claw my way out of this corner that I painted myself into? Like, what if I blew it up and started fresh and just took like these songs that, and we know that the songs have good melody, like the songs are almost completely done, and like there are, like most of them were written musically, and so really it was just a matter of finding like lyrics. And so I just started rewriting like Loser, That Old Private Hell, one night, and within the first half hour I had the whole song completely rewritten. And like I don't think I really picked up my, well, I don't think I really like stopped typing at any point. It was just like, it was just a complete flow state where I was like making sure the line would work in the context of the song, typing it up, and like it just came out of me. And I was like, well, that felt really awesome, because I had been so creatively blocked up to that point. And so then I was like, what if I tried that with some other songs? And I started doing that, and suddenly it was like, I don't know, it was the corner I had painted myself into was no more. Like the walls of the walls had been torn down, and it felt great. So, and I think the record is about a million jillion times better because of it, because it just came out so, I don't know. I think it's definitely our most personal record. It's the one I wrote the fastest, and I still think it's the one I'm proudest of. So I'm very, very happy I made that decision to, like, it was scary at the time to just completely, like, 1 month until we had to actually record it, and it had to be done. Like, I just started fresh. So I don't know. That should go for anybody who is thinking about doing something similar. Like, if you feel creatively stuck, like, nobody's necessarily pushing you in the direction you think you should take. Like if your gut says to try something new, then you probably should try something new. And like, I don't know, that validated that theory for me when I did that.
For sure. Yeah. And actually like that actually like speaks to me a lot too, because like the way how this podcast came together was that I just, like, wasn't feeling super motivated to, like, write, but I was still really wanted to, like, I love doing interviews, and I still really wanted to talk to bands.
Yeah.
So, like, I had the idea of the podcast, and it came together, like, super quickly after the fact, so it's interesting to see that parallel.
Yeah, no, and that's, I mean, I feel like so many good things come out of situations like that, where, like, I mean, you can do something that your heart's not in for a certain amount of time, and, like, it helps if you're getting paid, or if it's, like, your job, or there's some sort of stability or reliability about it. Like, I think that's definitely, there's something to be said about that. But, like, if it's something where the only person pushing you is yourself, and you're not feeling excited about it, like, really gut check and find something you could change about it or do in a new way that will make you excited about it, and just accept that as, like, that's the right approach, because you feel it's right in the moment. You know what I mean?
Not
overthinking it. So like, yeah, I think, like, the podcast example, like, you were not, I'm assuming this about you, but I'm assuming you hadn't stopped being stoked about music and talking about music. You just didn't want to do the act of putting it on paper or typing it up. You wanted to talk about it. Like,
yeah, for sure.
It's like the same thing in essence, and keyword in essence, but it's a different format, and you just went with what was easiest. So I think that's awesome. I'm all for doing that in life.
Yeah, definitely. And it's also really interesting, like, it makes, now that you say it, it makes a lot of sense that, like, a lot of these lyrics came out almost like stream of consciously, because it's like the album is, like, so dense lyrically, and, like, hearing that you cut all the lyrics that you had, like, a month beforehand, I was like, how did it turn into that then? So it makes a lot of sense that it, like, came out, like, super fast.
Yeah, I mean, it turns out a lot can happen, and, like, I hadn't really written straight up from my perspective since we first started out, and, like, I was first writing music. Like, obviously, I'm always writing in my voice, but it's always a kind of variations on my voice. But to actually write from, I don't know, the perspective of me, age 28, when I hadn't done it since I was, like, whatever, 23 or 24. Like, turns out a lot can change in 4 or 5 years. So I had a lot to say, and getting it out was, like, it was a profound sort of catharsis.
I know you've been working with Jack Shirley, like, pretty much consistently since Citrosis came out. Can you talk a little bit about, like, the relationship, the working relationship with him?
Yeah, I mean, he's great. He's, I would consider, one of our best band buddies. I don't think we'll ever stop going. As long as we're a band, I'm assuming we'll be making records with Jack Shirley's involvement. And over time, like you said, we started off making Citrosis with him at his studio. And I lived out there at the time in California. So it was like, cool producer, lives near me. Everybody can come out. It'll be a fun vacation for them. And we'll just make this record, see how it goes. And we were, like, super intimidated by him at first, because he knows exactly what he's doing. And we didn't really at the time. We had only made records by ourselves, for ourselves up to that point. But over time, like, we made Citrosis with him. Then we went back to him and made the Grand Spontaneum. That was such, like, we had, like, I think 2 weeks to make that 30-song album, which, I mean, it was a good amount of, definitely a good amount of studio time, but also, like, no amount of time would have been enough to make that. And so we learned how to really work efficiently and quickly with him without really, like, being precious about anything. And then he mixed and mastered Modern Abrasive, which was the EP we put out last year. And it ended up sounding great. We tracked that one ourselves, and he mixed and mastered it. And then, of course, we went back and did Hard Pop. And it was like we didn't even have to, like, exchange niceties at first. Like, it was, like, obviously we did, because we were happy to see him and he's happy to see us because we're friends. But he knows exactly the sound that we make together, and he knows exactly what amps and guitars and equipment to give us out of his huge selection of them, exactly, you know, where to start in terms of all of the tracking magic, like, that happens. Like, he knows exactly, like, what setup we need to use to get the signature sound, I guess. And we can just make music pure and simple, like just put record music, mess with it, you know, do dubs and fix stuff. And like, he's just basically there to create as little noise as he possibly can, you know, in the process, and like, but he's also an essential part of the process in that he gets us completely and will know how to service any, he basically speaks our language. And I would urge, you should strive in a creative relationship to like get to that point. It's hard, it's so freaking hard, I think, to get to that point. But if you can find it, either with your bandmates and or with the people you're working with, or even in any other medium, like to create a shorthand where you can pick up where you left off, like, it's just such an awesome thing to have. So forever grateful for Jack Shirley. He's a man.
Yeah, I mean, that definitely sounds like a super, like, cool and special relationship that you guys have.
Yeah, I mean, and it's not like sassy or anything. It's like, he's a great buddy, and I wish we saw him more. Really, the only time we ever see him is when we're hard at work making records. But he's also just a really cool dude who has worked on. He's like, it's just a fountain of knowledge. He really should be like a college professor or something. So I wish he was more of like. He's someone that I could probably see every day and, like, I don't know, and not get tired of. But also, I mean, we only see him when he's working on our records. So I guess I can't know that for sure, but he's the man.
That's awesome. And I know you've been sharing, like, a couple of the isolated orchestral tracks lately from Hard Pop. But could you talk a little about, how those come together, like the making of like the auxiliary and
that's
like,
kind of a weird
stuff.
That's a weird aspect of it, because the person that arranges those and records them, his name is Peter Hess. He is he's a genius. I was introduced to him through his friend Franz Nicolai from the Hold Steady, and he's worked with the Hold Steady and World Infernal Friendship Society and TV on the Radio and all these other bands. And he lives in Brooklyn, and he has this whole kind of like group of friends and professional acquaintances who basically play any orchestral instrument you can think of. And he also has an amazing mind for composing and arranging orchestral parts. Mm-hmm. And so like our relationship started on the Grand Spontanean, because we knew we wanted that to have the air of theatricality. And so how do you create that without, you know, apart from rock instrumentation? And I think orchestra goes a long way to doing that. And somehow we lucked out with this dude who just, again, he gets us because he's worked with bands like the Hold Steady, who I think are one of our big influences, and make a similar type of music as we do, I think, at its core. And without me even needing to send this dude chords or anything, we just sent him like the most rudimentary, like stupid descriptions of what we're thinking, as well as maybe some sonic references. And he's like, okay, let me see what I can do. And before we know it, like, he doesn't even send us back like demos or anything. He's just like, okay, it's a couple weeks later, I had some friends over and we did this, and it's like freaking amazing. Lined up like perfectly well recorded, because he has his own studio. It's like orchestral tracks, and we couldn't have asked for a better working relationship with him, because we don't have to do shit. Like, I sent him a Google Doc, and I'm like, hey, so on this song from Spontanean, Martyr's View from The View, dot 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 dot, we're thinking it sounds kind of like a Randy Newman song. So, you know, here's like a Randy Newman song we're thinking of from Sail Away or whatever, or Little Criminals. Could you try to emulate that? And then it comes back sounding like freaking Randy Newman. And like, how cool, it's like the coolest feeling ever. We always geek out so hard. He also plays a mean saxophone, and any saxophone solo you're hearing in a telethon song is being played by him. I think there's like two or three of them at this point, but he's the man, and his friends are all super talented.
Do you feel like not having that at the live show like affects the songs in any way, or do you just see them as kind of two separate experiences?
It's two separate experiences. I mean, we've had people come up and like rip a saxophone solo during certain, like The Runner's High, which is a song that has a big Springsteen-esque saxophone solo. But at the same time, like, obviously we don't want to we can't travel around with an orchestra, and we don't know anybody who could do it anyway. Like that would want to do that. And so I think when people see us, like, I think we definitely emphasize the parts that you don't hear, the orchestral intricacies work themselves out because we just kind of like rock harder because of it, because we know it's supposed to be there. So like Jack will do a guitar solo instead of a sax solo. And like, I don't know, if you've heard the song, you can kind of fill in the blanks of what's missing. And if you haven't, I think they still, then it's like you heard the song, maybe you liked it with its core rock instrumentation like in the live show. Now you go back and listen to the record and it's like, has a completely different vibe because it has all this orchestral nuance, or even just the way a song is arranged could be completely different when you translate it to a live setting. And so, yeah, I just think of that as like, I think it's fun to have little differences between the studio records and the live recordings, and that's what makes a band dynamic and interesting.
And I know we kind of hit on the lyrics a little while ago, and he's like scrapping the original concept and stuff. Is there any chance we'll ever see any of those, like, alternate version with the original concept lyrics?
No, I don't think so. Part of that is by necessity because, unfortunately, the hard drive I was working on, that all that was, like, written on, and I hadn't converted it to the cloud yet, that hard drive straight up failed, and all of the data was wiped from it.
Oh,
so
wow.
There's that. But I also remember some of it, and, like, I sometimes accidentally start singing it, like, when it happens way less now, but it used to happen all the time because, like, I would start singing the alternate lyrics. So, like, I mean, I can remember some of them, but at the same time, and I, like, remember the story, but also just wasn't, I don't know. It kind of gives me a bad feeling in the pit of my stomach when I think about that, because it was such, like, I was so creatively unhappy with it. It wasn't because it was bad either. It's just my heart wasn't in it. And I think realistically, I just needed to do something different than I needed to get out of that corner. And so, I don't know. I don't see any reason to like return to it. And I used to think maybe like no good concept ever really dies, so maybe it will come back. And at the same time, like, but then I would have to like revitalize it. And I don't know if I really want to do that. So who knows? It could happen.
I also wanted to hit on kind of like the fan base in general, because I feel like you guys have a really like strong and passionate fan base, even if it's not like, you know, you're not like one of the huge bands in pop punk or anything like that. Just kind of by the, I guess kind of like partially like the nature of your music, but I think that also is what kind of brings out this passion in bands. Could you tell me a little bit about like that aspect of the band?
Yeah, I've noticed that too. And I am super into it. I love that, like, the people that, like, we might have less people who are, and it's definitely grown, so I'm not complaining. Like, this band has gone way farther than I ever thought, I think any of us ever thought it would. And we're hashtag grateful for that. hashtag blessed. But, like, I think the fact that we have like, I don't know, we're not setting out to do the same thing that everybody else is doing. And that doesn't mean, I'm not saying we're better than them or in any way. We just, like, I don't know how to make the music that's trendy. I only know how to make the music that I make, you know? And I think we all feel the same way. And so the fact that anybody listens to it and feels a pull to it is the best. And I do think that there's loyalty there. I don't know why, except just the fact that, I mean, we have a lot of music. Like, I mean, we counted it up the other day because we did, like, a survey of, like, what are your top five favorite telephone songs? I don't know why we did that. So it would be fun. And I was like, that was the first time I ever saw them all written out. I was like, holy shit, we have 75 songs. Like, I mean, it must feel, it would be cool, I guess, to, like, get into a band that isn't broken up. I mean, just stepping outside of, you know, myself right now, like, it'd be cool to discover a band that's still active and still playing, like, a small, like, in small clubs, and you can talk to them and all that stuff. Because we're just normal people with day jobs and just completely normal people. But we also have five records that you can discover. It's not just one record. It's like we have a whole, you know, discography that you can, if you discover hard pop, you can then go back and listen, like, oh shit, there's a 90-minute rock opera in here. Or maybe you discover the rock opera and then you get really into all the records surrounding it. Like, so I think I'm happy that it's resonated with people. And I think that's what I secretly wanted out of making music is like the, well, A, I always want people to like me, and B, just like creative, like to be able to create something and have at least a small set of, you know, a sizable set of people like care about it and care that I made it and listen to it. And like, mostly just think about it and talk to me about what it made them feel and maybe correlates in their own life. And people do that now. And it's like the most gratifying thing in the world. It's like, I can't remember exactly, but I think that's like at its core what I wanted to write music about my life for in the first place. So
I actually did just go through the whole discography today.
You said that. Yeah, you tweeted that. And I was like, oh my God, are you going to talk to me now? Like, how is he now just like in bed, like exhausted? Just like quite an undertaking.
Yeah, for sure. I think it was actually the first time that I had listened to Witness, and I was very surprised at like the change in sound between that and Citrosis.
All right, now you have to go through and tell me all of your deepest, most thoughts about each one. Just kidding. I am curious though, like, what'd you think of, like, Witness definitely is way different. I mean, we didn't know what the hell we were trying to sound like at the time, but I don't know. We've kept it as we consider that our first LP. So I always assume like people are surprised when they go back and listen to that. 'Cause we made it in a freaking university library basement in the dead of winter. Like, so it like sounds different. Like, we hadn't quite figured it out. So I always wonder how jarring it is to go back and listen to that for the first time.
Yeah, it was definitely, like I said, it was definitely unexpected, but I could hear like roots of the sound in it for sure. And just generally, you know, it's like, I thought it was a good rock record and stuff.
Oh, good.
I mean, I definitely saw like, obviously a leap between that and Citrosis. And I feel like there was not like the same type of leap. There was also a leap between Grand Spontanean and Modern Abrasive. Could you talk a little bit about the gap between those two records?
Do you mean like the differences, or like, are you saying you saw a big difference when you say a leap, or do you mean like it like they like transition into each other?
I guess I mean like, I feel like the sound in Modern Abrasive is kind of more, it feels more like concise and more like specific,
I think you're right. Yeah, I totally see what you mean. We were really obsessed with, like, on Modern Abrasive. So on Spontanean, we were like, well, to preface this all, it's all evolution and us just getting, I think, better. I think that's almost an objective fact. Like, we've just gotten better at playing with each other and knowing what kind of sound we're trying to make. We've just honed it in over time. So that's just what happens in the years between making records. So there's that. But then, like, on the Grand Spontanean, we were trying to evoke the feeling of, like, epic rock operas and classic rock, like, and double albums and just, like, giving it a lot of room to breathe. So, like, Bruce Springsteen's The River was a big influence. I was talking to somebody about Meatloaf and, like, American Idiot and all that stuff. Whereas on Modern Abrasive, we were listening to, like, a shitload of Sounds of Wayne and, like, Cheap Trick and all those records and just really tight, well-constructed, tight pop records, power pop records. And we were like, I think we could make something like this. And suddenly we had, you know, an 8-track EP of concise pop songs. And then we took that and we were like, well, that worked well. What if we kind of mixed the grandiosity of our last LP with, like, the tightness of the last EP? And I think that's a pretty good summation of what hard pop is, at the risk of sounding, like, too pretentious or like I'm thinking about it too much. I think, like, naturally, like, the Grand Spontanean plus Modern Abrasive equals hard pop.
Yeah, I think actually, like, hearing you talk about that makes a lot of sense. And, like, if you had asked me what my favorite Telethon release was before I listened today, I think I would have said Modern Abrasive. But, like, hearing it all kind of, like, at once and hearing the, like you said, like, the similarities and the differences between the last three releases, I think it really gave me, like, an even more of an appreciation for hard pop.
Yeah, I mean, and we're not trying to do that in any way, but afterwards, you know, once you actually hear the finished product, I think it's kind of, like, clear in retrospect what ends up happening, you know? I also think, like, the fact that it's an LP with a bigger budget and more time to make it, and, I don't know, an LP just has a lot more planning and thought to it, I think, than an EP in many cases. The fact that like, hard pop has orchestra stuff and all that make it also feel more like the Grand Spontanean than Modern Abrasive. But yeah, it's definitely a mix. It's all going in there. I definitely wonder what the next thing will sound like. Because my opinion is that, like, hard pop is really just, like, the type of record we've always been trying to make. And so I just kind of see us continuing along this path. So I hope that's not boring for people that are expecting us to sound different on every record or for each record to be slightly, like, different in some way. Because I think we've kind of found the groove that we've been looking for 5 years, and this is the pocket we're going to stay in for a while.
Yeah, I mean, well, even if the records stay relatively similar, the songs are different from one to another, so I'm sure that there
exactly.
will be that,
exactly.
that variety.
It's all about it's all about the hooks. Run good hooks and good songs.
And I don't really have a transition for these, but I do have a couple kind of random questions that I think would be fun to ask. Obviously, like, amusement parks is something that's, like, really big for you and, like, kind of the identity of the band. What is it that kind of draws you to them?
I'm going to correct you and say theme parks. Amusement parks are more, amusement parks are a little, in my opinion, lower, bit substandard. I do like them, but, like, I'm more obsessed with theme parks, which would be, like, your, I'm being facetious here and stupid, but I'm a designer, like, that's my day job, and so I think the thing that got me into design is the kind of my childhood obsession with going to Disney World and, like, constantly trying to figure out, like, okay, like, this is all a manufactured environment. Why did they manufacture it the way that they did. Like, it was never necessarily about, like, the magic of it, like, the, in terms of, like, the magic to me has always just been in how they, like, operate and how they kind of, the feelings that they give people, and, you know, the scale of them, the fun of them. And I think that that kind of childhood obsession just carried over through everything in my life. Like, it's really remained, like, the only constant of my interests. And I've always, like, it's just, like, something that seeps through in all of my creative endeavors and probably is the reason why I'm a designer. And I, like, everybody else in the band loves them, and I think just the fact that we all, it's kind of become like a thing now, how much we love theme parks and Disney and Universal and Six Flags and stuff like that. It's kind of become part of the lore, which is always what I wanted, to be able to, like, geek out and people to be able to put, like, theme park Easter eggs in our songs or in anything I'm making, and for people to actually, like, start to get it and, like, start to like us, like, for theme park people to, like, find a niche within whatever I'm making and, like, be like, hey, this guy's like me. He's, like, secretly like me. I think that would be a cool thing to aspire to. So,
yeah, it's definitely going back to, like, the audience idea of things. Like, it's definitely another cool thing for people to be able to latch on to if they feel that connection.
Yeah, I never want it to be too obvious, though. Like, as, like, the hard pop album cover is, like, a plastic house that existed at Disneyland in the 50s, but it's also just a cool picture of a kind of evocative house. Like, it elicits some sort of emotion, and so I think of it like a good kind of like our version of the classic emo record, like with a house on the cover, you know, except it's a Disneyland house. I had that thought the other day. It's like our American football or like the hotelier house is, but it's at Disneyland.
Yeah, too bad people won't be able to visit and take pictures in front of it.
I went to the site where it used to stand, and it's now like kind of like a weird little like courtyard garden thing that you can walk through. And I had learned that there was still foundation from the house that you could see in one place. And so I was just kind of like wandering around trying to take a picture and like videotape myself in front of it, like, this is the only thing that's left standing from the house of the future that's on the cover of the record. But also it's like a Tinkerbell meet and greet area, so I was just kind of the weird man that was alone and wandering around videotaping in the Tinkerbell meet and greet area. So I felt a little bit self-conscious, and I think people were kind of peering at me, but yeah, I did find it eventually. It was kind of cool.
It's that time again. We're rounding towards the end of the interview, so I'm going to take a quick moment to show appreciation to another creator who has inspired me lately. This week, I want to shout out the Angry Girl Music of the Indie Rock Persuasion podcast, hosted by Amanda Starling. The podcast focuses on women, LGBTQIA+, and people of color in the music industry, with conversations that are as fun as they are heartfelt. We already have some crossover, since Eric from Proper was on while the band was still known as Great White, but there's sure to be even more in the future. There'll be a link to the podcast in the show notes, so please check it out.
What has been, like, a recent challenge and a recent success that you've had, like, as far as the band goes?
I'll start with the success. Like, I think, like, getting signed to Take This to Heart was a recent success. I never thought that would ever happen. And it felt really good to know that, like, this thing that we used to really want to happen but then kind of gave up on, like, it was nice that it actually did happen. We appreciated that. And then just the release of the record, I think, went really well. I'm really happy that people like it, and just to see that people think it's, a lot of people have told me, like, I think it's our best yet, and, like, we agree, and that those two things matching up, like, that feels good. I can't imagine, like, thinking you made the best thing of your life, and then you hear from people, like, that they don't like it as much. Like, I don't know how I would react to that. I'm sure it will happen to me sometime, but it's a scary thought. And I would say, like, the ongoing challenge of simply being a band in 2019, for lack of a better way to sum it up, like, as much traction as hard pop has gotten us, like, it always feels like we're climbing uphill. And that's fine. Like, we're happy to do it. But at the same time, like, all we want is for, like, as many people as possible to listen to the songs that we put out. Like if I just want people to press play, listen to the whole song, listen to the next song, and just, like, literally just listen to our music. And sometimes it feels like that's the hardest thing in the world for anybody to do. And, like, that can sometimes be a bummer and be a challenge. I shouldn't even say sometimes. That's always kind of, like, a bummer for probably any band that's our size. It's like, well, how do you become one of those bands that, I guess, everybody's talking about? And, you know, then there's also the constant worry, like, of why do I care about that? Like, why do I care about that validation so much? So it can sometimes make you feel kind of yucky for caring about it. I don't know. Patience has paid off for us so far, and I'm sure it will continue to pay off. And it doesn't keep me awake at night, because I know that there's, like, all the people that you know, do feel the same way as I do. And also there's a lot of people who like Telethon. So that's great.
I've been stealing this from Ron Funch's Getting Better podcast. I like to end episode by asking for either, like, a piece of advice or just something that you've, like, generally been thinking about lately, whether it's related to the band or just life in general.
Let's see. Piece of advice or something I've been thinking about lately. There's, like, so many. I tried to put some of those in the record, like, stuff that I've been rattling in my head that has made me feel better, and I would consider, if you want to say advice, so don't overthink it. It doesn't have to be that hard. I think those are my two mottos right now. It's like if you're overthinking it, you're probably the only person in the room who is, you know, in the world who is. Like, if it's something insular and about yourself, like, you're your harshest critic. And it's better to do something and finish it and have it done and out there than to waste time second guessing it. That has been really freeing, like, to have that kind of in the back of my head at all times for anything creative, but also anything just in life, in social settings or personal, professional, et cetera, et cetera. And also, that goes hand in hand with, this is something I did put in a song, it doesn't have to be that hard, which, take that however you want, but there's a lot of people out there that are willing to support you if you're having a hard time with something. And never forget the zillions of people who, maybe not zillions, but a couple handfuls, of people who do have your back, because, like, those almost always outweigh the people that might be your harshest critics or that might not like you or whatever. So rest easy knowing that you have people out there that can help life not be that hard.
And there you have it. Episode 2 of Fly on the Call is a wrap. Thank you for listening, and thank you to Kevin for taking the time to talk. Please check the show notes and go listen to Telethon's Hard Pop, out now through Take This to Heart Records, whether you've listened before or not. A special thank you to The Alternative for their help in promoting the show, and Kaylin West of Tiny Stills for the theme song. Please subscribe if you've enjoyed this interview, and follow the podcast on Twitter and Instagram at FlyOnTheCallPod. That's also where I'll be dropping a hint as to who the coming week's guest is every Monday. The first person to guess right will get to hear the episode early. You can send suggestions, feedback, or greetings to flyonthecallpod@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening, and enjoy the rest of your day. Fly on the call.
What's up, everybody? I am Finn McKenty, host of the Punk Rock NBA podcast, part of the Sound Talent Media podcast network. My podcast is all about doing what you love for a living, and every week I sit down and talk to people who have done exactly that. For example, musicians like Tommy from Between the Buried and Me, Matt from Periphery, Lil Lotus and Shinigami, among many others, photographers, artists, designers, YouTubers like Glenn Fricker and Sarah Dici, and I unpack exactly how they got to where they are today with the goal of helping you do the same. So if that sounds cool, you can listen and subscribe at soundtalentmedia.com, and I'll see you there.